Good morning, Sam. How are you?
Good morning.
So, Sam, you've come in. It's not quite as early for you over there. It's be 11 o'clock for you.
Well, I'm on my farm. It's not that early. You know, I have to get up and let the chickens out at 7 a.m. Otherwise, I'm in big trouble. So I've been up for a couple of hours. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I bet. Have you actually been in the vineyard this morning?
No, there's nothing going on in the vineyard this morning. It's Sunday and we have finished vintage. I had a crew of about 24 people here. Everything came on at once this year. And we did a sort of record time pick. Within 2 weeks, I think we'd got everything into the winery.
Wow.
I had 14 French people. It looked like Burgundy. It sounded like Burgundy.
Right.
It's looking very good this year. Looking very
good. So efficient vintage. That's great that it is a very good vintage. And we are hearing that all around. So let's just take it all back to how you all started with Two Paddocks. People know you so very well as an actor and a very good one. And a lot of people do also realise that you have a passion for Pinot Noir, and obviously being a Kiwi and living in central Otago, it seems like a natural step. But what was it that actually influenced you to produce your own wines?
Look, it wasn't an instant thing. It's happened by degrees. I just thought I would like to plant, you know, a couple of acres and see how it went. And it was very early days. We're talking 30 years ago, it was very early days for Central Otago. And there were a couple of friends who were producing stuff that I thought was interesting. I was a big fan of Burgundy. And to be able to grow something that was so similar and yet unique, so similar to the sort of wine I was enthusiastic about, mm-hmm. having lived in Europe for 8 or 9 years, I thought was an opportunity I shouldn't give away. But I'd started very humbly. I just planted, I think it was 5 acres, and then I got less and less humble, and I made the mistake. Well, it's not a mistake actually, but I realized I didn't want to just make drinkable wine. I wanted to make the greatest wine in the world. So I'm not an ambitious person. I'm not a competitive person. I don't like any of that stuff. So I don't want to be better than anyone else, but I do want to make, and I think I am making now, some of the greatest wine you can buy.
Well, I actually have tasted one of your Pinot Noirs. It was a while ago. And look, Central Otago, everyone knows it's being one of the best places in the world to make beautiful Pinot Noir. So you chose Pinot. You also make a Riesling, but you just stick with those varietals. Is that right?
Yes. In those early days, we were planting a lot of different things. And yesterday, I was looking at what I call my library block, and I've got things like Viognier and Cabernet Franc and so on. Planted there, you know, just a couple of bays of all these different varieties. But there were two varieties that sat up and said, we love it here. And one of them was Pinot Noir. Mm. The other one was Riesling. And I'd never taken much notice of Riesling because we were so put off by what was called Riesling in the old days. It wasn't really Riesling at all, but it was these sort of generic brands that came in big bottles. And if you were on a romantic in the 70s, you might have bought them mistakenly, thinking you might get lucky. But they probably... They probably weren't Riesling at all, but Riesling in its greatest expression, I think, is one of the great varieties. And I've been growing it now as long as I've been growing Pinot Noir, and I absolutely adore it.
It is beautiful, and Rieslings do prosper so beautifully, of course, in Central Otago as well. So lovely, cool climate Rieslings. So you've just mentioned Well, you've got your library block. I like that. I think, and I get that. That's very aptly named for all these other varietals that you're just doing like a small focus on. Is that something that you will end up, you know, selling under the Two Paddocks umbrella, or is this purely just for your own entertainment?
It's purely for my entertainment. And it also underlines the fact that there's really only two or three things that you should be growing here, and stick with that and be good with, you know, and make the best, you know, the best Pinots in the world. This is our task. It's been heaven sent.
Yes, absolutely. So you actually have quite a wide range of Pinot Noirs that you produce. So I'd love you to talk to that a bit, but really tell us which wines have you been most proud of since you've been making wine? Is there a particular vintage or a particular one?
Well, let me tell you, the last four vintages have been outstanding. 21, 22, 23, and now 24, I think is going to be up there with them. I think one of the really interesting things about growing wine is single vineyard releases. And I have four little vineyards. They're all very small. And in a good year, I will make a single for, you know, it. One's called The Last Chance, one's called The Fusilier, and one is called The First Paddock. That's the very first one we planted, as the name would imply. And the idea of a wine expressing the time it grew and the actual place where it grew is there's nothing quite like that. At the same time, we've never shied away from blends. So those four vineyards, we are blended together in different proportions for the two paddocks Pinot Noir, and then we make a Picnic Pinot Noir, which is a more everyday Pinot. And now we're producing something called the Major General, which is a sort of super blend. So that's three blends. But now the other thing I realized as we went along was that I was increasingly concerned about a number of things. And I realized I wanted to make organic wines. And I was very disenchanted with conventional wine growing and the chemicals that are necessary. So now everything that we do is entirely certified organic, and that makes me sleep better at night. And we also make so-called natural wine. I decided to do that differently because natural wine is usually made by people in a garage. They buy someone else's grapes. And they're not usually natural at all. They're in fact conventional grapes. But I decided let's try, and from our Fuselier vineyard we'll get the very best pocket, the place we like the best in the vineyard, get the best grapes and make them into a no ads wine. And the contrast, it's very interesting to see the contrast between the classically made Pinot from that part of the vineyard and the natural. Now the natural is very drinkable and it's very delicious, but of course, don't put it down because there's nothing to there's
it has
nothing
to be fresh to preserve it.
That's right. So we tend to pick it with a slightly higher acidity than the others, but other than that, it gives you a very good idea about the difference between natural, in inverted commas, and classically made wine. So we do have I think we lined up about seven Pinots from our four vineyards yesterday.
Wow. Well, I'm very happy to hear that you've had four magnificent vintages and this last one being extremely efficient. But just quickly on the natural wine, it's an interesting question. It's an interesting topic. For wine lovers, you know, people are either pro or against. to your point, a lot of them actually aren't that natural. You know, even if it's just minimal intervention, there is still some form of preservatives, et cetera. But either way, it really comes down to the taste. That's what it is. It's a palatable, pun intended, to the wine drinker. And you get some very varied discussions around it. So what's been the feedback on your natural wine in regards to your others and other natural wines that are coming out of New Zealand?
Look, I don't want to get too controversial about it either, but I do get a little overworked sometimes when people virtue signal with natural wines, because usually they're just badly made wines. That's the truth of it.
Yeah, I think
And I went with a bunch of wine critics to Paris about 5 years ago, and And even the French are kind of crazy about natural wines at the moment. So we went to the very best natural wine bar that we could find. It's quite famous, and it's up near Montmartre. And we took guidance from the maitre d', and he showed us some of the best wines that he had. Most of them, I thought, were actually undrinkable.
I'm hearing you.
I mean, I'm all for minimal intervention, but we learned something like 3,000 years ago how to make wine properly, you know, and adding a tiny bit of sulfur, and it's minute in quantity, what we might typically add. Means that your wine will last for 20, 30 years. And a 20-year-old wine that can be so immensely rewarding, and it's very different from something that I released yesterday. And if it's good wine, you should give it the opportunity to age. And I love drinking my wines when they're aged. It's immensely... It really tickles me.
I bet. What was your first vintage?
My first vintage was 97. Mm-hmm. And my last vintage under cork was 99. All those first three vintages had some duff corks. I'm not happy with the cork industry. Well, particularly the ones that they send to our part of the world. And I've been very happy with Stelvin closures ever since then.
Look, I mean, this is the question we speak to people all the time. You know, Henschke, they just stand, you know, black and blue behind their screen caps and the closure. Others just stand behind cork. It's just very personal sort of preference. But what particularly ticked it over? You just mentioned that the quality of the corks that were coming over to your part of the world weren't that great. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I was infuriated that in 99, which wasn't a bad vintage actually, it was my third, that we estimated that about 20% of the wine was corked. Now, it's an obviously corked wine is one thing. You know, you can sniff the cork and send it back, but a wine that's just a little bit corked, that's the dangerous thing. And people can go, it was okay, you know, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't terribly good. And that's the danger of slight corkage is more dangerous to me than heavy corkage. But there is too much of it around. I mean, 3% is too much for me. It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. You wouldn't, if you're buying a good car, you know, if you're buying Mercedes Benz, and really you're buying a Bentley when you buy two paddocks. You don't want somewhere between.
My dad drives a Bentley, so you know he'll appreciate that one.
Somewhere between 3% and 7% failures in Bentleys would be unacceptable, wouldn't it?
Yes. Sure. Yeah. Well, no, I love that you're actually, you know, assimilating your Bentleys to your two paddocks wine. So on that, because I'm going to have a lot of people ask me this, how do we get our hands on your wines, apart from buying online from your website?
Oh, well, I negotiants, who are most wonderful distributors. They are based in Adelaide. They're Yolumba under a different name. And they've been with us forever. And we're part of their portfolio. So, yeah, it's widely available in Australia. And mind you, it's always a little bit hard to find because we're tiny. But we that new super blend I was talking about, which is called the Major General, it's named after my great-great-grandfather, we sent all of 12 cases to Australia. So,
oh, whole 12.
You're probably not going to find it in Woolworths, you know what I mean?
No, no, we're not. And look, and we love that. We love the exclusivity, but it does, you know, it is something that we want to be able to taste. Do you actually have a functioning cellar door, like a tasting?
Look, we don't have a cellar anymore. Look, we call it the clubhouse now, and we sort of encourage people to join our club, because it was actually a bit of a pain. You know, people would come in and they'd waste your time for an hour, and I'd have, you know, one of my people serving wine and opening all sorts of bottles of wine for them, and they would buy one Riesling and leave.
Yeah, and then, yeah, yeah.
That anymore. Fans, you know, and they were hoping to see me or something like that, which is even more annoying. So, so we closed the cellar door, but it is open to club members, and we're happy to see.
Okay, right. So actually, we've just had a text in from Christopher. So he says, "Hi, Jill. A question for Sam. Has he shared any bottles of Two Paddocks with any of your Hollywood actor friends? And do any of them love your wines?"
The answer to that is many times, and to universal acclaim.
of course it is. So actually, I'd like to know, what is your favourite way to enjoy one of your favourite Pinots? Can you actually explain the scenario? Are you sitting on a deck at your home, or is it out in the paddocks, or what's your ideal way to enjoy it?
Oh, it's always with food. It's yes. I'm not one of those people that has a drink at 5 o'clock and then gets around to eating it at eight.
Eight, yes, right.
For me, wine is all about food and all about good company and conversation and living, you know, and the good life. I can't imagine living well without wine anymore. Perhaps I've got a limited brain, but it's so integral to. And I love going to restaurants and ordering a good bottle of wine, and it so amplifies the entire experience. Food and wine for me go together, and also delightful company. I like listening to that little song that you play at the beginning, because
yes, the Billy Joel song.
It's romantic too, wine, isn't it?
Yeah, it is very romantic. Yes, it is. Even if a lot of those romantic notions aren't actually that founded, but yes, right. It is. Yeah.
And you may change your mind in the morning.
Yes, well, absolutely. But I think where the romanticism comes from is that it's people have a love affair with it. It's the sort of product, you know, commodity that you learn to love and have a passion about. I mean, you're a classic example. I mean, you're an actor. You didn't grow up with wine running through your veins as a winemaker's son. You opted to do it because you had love for it. And it's, you know, everyone's got their own story. So you're so dedicated. You know, food and wine go hand in hand, and I very much believe that. And if you go through the ages, wine wasn't really there just to drink. Although I guess, you know, for the Romans, it was to give them a little bit of stuff in the wars, etc. But on the whole, it was to be a communal experience to share with family and have with food. And that's what I love, that the Italians and the French tend to do that. They don't really drink without food. Australians, we drink without food often, as well as with. But I think it's the wine. Food could often make the wine taste a bit better, but wine always makes the food taste better.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I think when you look at it from that, would you agree with that?
Yeah, undoubtedly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, it's something that we do love. So on that, are you a bit of a chef? Are you handy in the kitchen?
No, I'm a terrible cook, and it's the one thing I take my hat off to people that find cooking relaxing. I think it's the least relaxing thing I could possibly think of. The anxiety that goes with having everything ready at the same time just fills me with horror. So I love I love having people cook for me, and I love a good chef. But doing it myself, no. Breakfast is about, you know, my limit.
Okay, well, that's totally fair enough. So just very quickly, where did the name Two Paddocks come from? I'm assuming it's fairly self-explanatory. There would be Two Paddocks at some point. But is there more to the story of the naming?
Look, my friend Roger Donaldson, who directed the first film I was ever in called Sleeping Dogs, we bought two paddocks side by side. And my father, there is wine and spirits in my family because, you know, Neil and Company was a wine and spirit. They were wine and spirits merchants. My father was in the army for 20 years, and then he went back and joined the family firm, which was all about wine and spirits. And in those days, importing French wines in particular. But we had the biggest selling brandy. I'm not saying it was any good, but it was the biggest selling brandy in New Zealand. And its name was Beehive Brandy. And Dad would always say, the reason it sells well is because New Zealanders don't have to be embarrassed to say the name. It's not like Courvoisier or something like that. It's a very simple, straight up Beehive. A bottle of Beehive, please. And so I said to Roger, why don't we call it Two Paddocks? Because you've got one paddock and I've got another paddock. And it's easy to say.
Yeah.
He went along with that suggestion. He didn't produce any wine for 3 years. He got frosted or something. And now he sold his vineyard. So we never actually went into partnership together. But I'd already registered the name Two Paddocks, and I thought, I'll stick with that. It's good enough.
Oh, it works. I like it. It actually, it absolutely does. Two paddocks, two varietals. No, it's great. So you have mentioned that the last four vintages have been great. Very happy with the most recent. What are the characteristics of the lovely Pinots that we can expect to see from the most recent vintage?
I think, I will say, If you're looking for what's in the glass, I sort of generalize because every wine is different, but lovely red and dark fruits, quite a lot of herbal characteristics, toasted herbal characteristics, and I think that's there's a lot of wild thyme that grows in and around the hills here, which I think contributes in part to that. They're vivid and they're vivid wines, and a friend of mine attributes that very much to a lot of the schist in the soil, which is that very sort of shiny. A lovely long finish, and more than that, there's a sort of indescribable thing which I describe as home. They remind me of home.
Nice, nice. So it really does sound like this might be one of your favorite vintages then.
Yeah.
In near two decades. So it would be remiss of me to not ask a couple of questions about your acting, if that's okay. You do have quite a lot of fans over here in Australia. Is there a time that we could look forward to seeing you in a series or a movie all about wine set in Central Otago or somewhere in New Zealand. Is that anything that's crossed your mind?
There's a bunch of friends of mine here that make a series called Under the Vines, and and they did ask me to participate in that, but I thought it's a bit close to home.
Okay, fair enough.
The series, and I really enjoy watching it. It's very relaxing, and I love all the characters in it. I thought it I might be a little cliched, but I might be playing myself, and that would be pretty boring for everybody.
I don't think that would be, but I totally understand. Now, this is the one with Rebecca Gibney, yes? We're talking the same one.
This is what?
This is the show with Rebecca Gibney.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. So we were speaking about that yesterday. I think that is, as you just said, the characters are great. They are really fun characters. There are a lot of fun shows coming out more about that. I thought that might be something you would do. And, of course, on your website, and everyone should check it out, twopaddocks.com.au and have a look at all the skits, the 3-minute videos that you've done. And I really loved that you started doing it during COVID. That seems like when you were like, okay, we're just stuck here, no one's doing anything, and you start doing these skits about wine and COVID, and they're just funny. So if anyone, when you've got a spare 15 minutes, jump on and check them out.
We have an unofficial motto for Two Paddocks. We call it in the cheering up business since 1993. I think that is another function of wine. It cheers you up.
Yes.
And when COVID was on, and people forget how sort of scary it was and how isolated we all were, I thought, because I was bored too, I thought, I'll just do a bunch of videos just to cheer people up and more than anything, cheer myself up. So that's why I did that stuff, yeah.
They are a bit of fun. They're actually very fun. So, look, Sam, thank you so much for spending your time. I understand you are a very busy man, and you're only just back from America shooting the Apples Never Fall. Is that right?
Apples Never Falls, yeah. We actually finished it last year, but I was over there, you know, doing the release and the publicity and all that stuff. But I've got another series, it's an Australian series, which will be out fairly soon, called The 12. This is the second series that we've done. I play an old windbag lawyer, and I think the second series is going to be very good. So that's the next thing to look out for.
Okay, certainly will. Thank you very much for taking all of this time. I'm so glad that we're able to make it work. And
it's a pleasure.
I do appreciate your time. This has been really fun.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Bye.